Welcome to the Wisdom Circle. To subscribe or follow us on your favorite podcast platforms, please visit us at www.thewisdomcircle.com.
Welcome to the Wisdom Circle. I am sitting here in Park Slope, Brooklyn, not my normal spot. Loving the chill and the cool weather and the energy of New York. It's quite a fun change. And Tony and I spent a lot of time together. I'm with my partner and pal for a very long time, Tony Ponturo. We both have a love for the city that will never change. But here we are having another episode coming up on a one-year anniversary of the Wisdom Circle. So, Tony, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. A little jealous you're in New York. And we talked about as much as we, you know, like places outside New York, there's nothing like that energy and, you know, 180 different nationalities. And you said earlier off screen was just walking around and dodging cars is sometimes fun. So, nothing like it. So
I get the biggest kick out of, you know, the very obedient tourists who see a don't walk sign, and there's not a car in sight on either side of that street, but until it says walk, they're standing there. And I'm like, go. Reminds me of Dustin Hoffman and Midnight Cowboy. But anyway, we digress. So
I'm walking here.
Damn it. I thought you had a great post this week, and I think it's a really important topic. So I want to jump into that first, and then maybe if we have some time left, we'll talk a little bit about what I'm calling March Madness madness. Having spent 15 years at Raycom Sports, pretty deep into the college scene, and I'm frankly not exactly liking what I'm seeing. So we'll see if we have time for a little bit of that. But to your point, the post was about leadership and the world we live in and the moral compass that we all need to keep an eye on. But I'd like you to expound on, since it was your thought, what you were thinking.
Yeah, you know, every once in a while I feel a need to write a 3 or 4 paragraph comment to express, and it's really about why we did the podcast, is to get people thinking, and particularly get young people thinking. And I get concerned, and we always say we're not talking about politics. This isn't even so much politics, but it's how society is showing how you just sort of sometimes ignore, talk back. I don't have to live by those rules. You know, catch me if you can. And I just think it's a really bad example to really young people as to particularly how business is. And you would hate to see it in business. You know, starting in the national television business, there were very rarely contracts. You would spend $50 million on a network on a handshake and a computer sheet that said you bought 6 Happy Days and 5, you know, Wonder Woman's or whatever. It was a handshake. And can that exist today? So I was encouraging those that coach young people or even leaders in the workplace is don't lose that moral compass. And even importantly for those that have been successful, I always call it pulling up the drawbridge, you know, those old castles where they would pull up the drawbridge and there'd be a big moat. It's like, okay, we're okay, safe in the castle. The rest of you, I don't really care because I'm safe. And I don't want to lose the fact that, you know, society is about all of us being as healthy as we can be. It's not just about the 1% or the 5%. We got to make sure everyone has something to live for and not lose that in the business world, not lose it in society, period, but certainly not lose it in the business world. And how do we, you know, say to young people, I know you're seeing that on the news, on X and whatever, but we're going to have a different environment here that looks out for everybody. And there's a way to do business. A quick aside, I'll do it in 30 seconds because I want you to obviously interject here. When I taught a class at NYU, I would say, okay, you're the new head of USA Soccer and you're going to FIFA. And they give you an envelope. And they say, this is how we do business. And there's $10,000 in it in cash. And they go, don't worry about it. This is how we do things. It's a little, you know, welcome to the society. I said, what would you do? And I can't tell you how many students would go, I don't know what I would do. And I would say, well, I'm not going to tell you what your moral compass should be, but if you accept the money, I sort of know who you are, and I've just bought you, you know? So give some thought to that. Because they would say, well, I may have school bills to pay or rent to pay. And so anyway, it was just young people don't know yet what their moral compass is. And so I was imploring people who are coaching people to try to, you know, try to help them figure that out.
Yep. Really important stuff. I think that the, you know, you go from a $50 million upfront on a handshake to welcome to FIFA. And I was told, no, and I'm with you, because I, when I went to Telemundo, first thing I heard was, okay, get ready for international sports, not U.S.-centric sports. And it's a different, it's a very different business. When you think about the guys who've gone to jail and the, want their Rolexes back, and it's just not the way we do business. And yet it's coming our way as the world gets smaller, as Hillary Clinton once said. There are good things about that, and there are not so good things about that. And some of that is the way the rest of the world was doing business. And I'm not judging. They weren't doing as well as America was for a very long time, and the way you did things was very different. But as that gets closer to our world of living, you know, the moral compass becomes really what you're going to lay down and think about when you look at your life. And I don't know if it's going to be a happy time, if you're feeling like, you know, you cheated your way to place. There are going to some people who won't care. Well, yeah, sorry, not sorry. But I guess it's a choice you make, to your point. Do you take the money or not? And I mean, my immediate reaction is, of course not. You know, you just say, this is not how I do business. Or this is not how U.S. soccer is going to do business. So it's a dilemma. I think you got to ask people to lean in on that. And you got to hope that the managers and the leaders of today lead that way. Because again, the influences are coming from all over the world. So I'm not going to solve it today, but I love that you brought it up. And I love that maybe it makes some people think about, you know, thinking about their moral compass and what would I do? It's a great question.
Yeah. No, it's
important.
You want to close
that out with a thought and then we'll go to the March Madness?
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I think just everyone realize, don't take the answer, well, this is how we do it. I think your answer is, well, that may be how you do it, but that's not how I want to do it. And then find a place, you know, where you're comfortable. Because there will be people that say, this is how we do it, and it's standard, and so be it. But then if something goes sideways, there'll be nowhere to be found when, you know, you have tax evasion or, you know. Anyway.
Cash.
Yeah. Well, so March Madness, how mad is it?
Yeah, it's mad. I think I'm mad at March Madness, frankly. Having not known much about, I followed college football growing up and got really deep into basketball at Raycom and loved the whole conference concept. And it's kind of like the World Cup in that a country and a conference become one thing. But in the ACC tournaments on, schools closed down for the finals and all sorts of good things would happen. And now, like anything, it's hard to know who's in what conference. The money is the leader, the coaches, the players, NIL. There's so much chasing the money. It's bigger than ever. We were just told that $3 billion will be bet on this year's tournament. I didn't even fill out a bracket. I'd have to just pick colors or mascot. I don't know. And so it's just annoying to me that something that was really good. I think it was a lack of leadership at the NCAA for years where they just could not figure out what to do with the student athletes. First, you can't take a car, but then you could get a car. You couldn't have a McDonald's hamburger, but then you could own a restaurant franchise. I mean, it was just horrible, horrible leadership. And in the absence of that, all hell broke loose. What do you think?
No, I think, you know, it's my theme of like everything's driven by revenue and money, and the brand, if you will take a hit over a period of time. And so the universities are like, you know, let's expand our conferences. It's like what you have, you know, UCLA and USC playing, you know, nowhere near the West Coast, you know, to
Big Ten championship.
Yeah. And you and I have talked about sports is tribal. So you lose, you know, in many respects, you know, the competition and the history and tradition of rivalries. It's all driven by money. You know, we'll see what the ratings look like, you know.
Right.
They will be boosted by betting, which then you hope doesn't lead to games that ultimately get influenced. But I think it's a sad state of affairs. And I read the other day where, you know, the Big East and the ACC are talking about merging, you know. So it's like, okay, now let's have 30 teams. And again, the only reason you do that is for money and revenue and broadcast. It has nothing to do with is that good for the student. And then the last thing, which I found really interesting. So the coach of McNeese State, which beat Clemson, his last name is Wade. He's already announced he's going to NC State. Already announced it. The players and everything are sort of fine because, you know what? Five of those players are going to go with him to NC State. So it used to be, well, you've lost the locker room and the whole bit, so you keep it quiet. He's like, I'm going to NC State, and some of you players play well in the tournament, and maybe you can come with me. So it's, again, what does that say to everybody? Where's the loyalty? Where's the process of you know, building the right brand? And so,
well, yeah, we'll close out on it with exactly a story that blew my mind, which was, and I don't remember the name of the team, so if I'd done my homework, I didn't know we were going to go here, but there was a team that was invited to a bowl game, but because the coach had left and the players followed him, they could not participate in the bowl game. So there you go. So anyway, I think your point is right. Let's look at the ratings, and they might be band-aided over by betting. But sometimes, you know, pageantry's gone, money's in. And maybe that's the world, to your point about all the other things about leadership and moral compass and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, the world we live in.
Well, I saw it real quick, you know, on X, David Portnoy is all over at Barstool Sports, and he's a big bettor. And so they're all sitting in a room watching these games, and he's either jumping up and down or he's depressed based not on the outcome of the win-loss. It's like on his bet. So I guess Yale was 12.5 points against who the hell did they play now? I'm going to forget. But you know, a good team. And they hit a three-pointer with like a few seconds left to took it. They only lost by 9. So if you bet Yale would beat the spread at 12.5, you won the bet. He won the bet. He's jumping up and down. Yale still lost the game,
right,
but only by 9 points and not but by 12.5. So it's a whole different way of viewing.
Yep. All righty. Well, I think we beat that up pretty good.
We bashed all of that.
Madness. All right. Well, let's talk about our guest, Erin Flynn. Who I'm so impressed with. She and I were I was a guest lecturer in a class at the University of Miami. And a couple of people followed up with me, but no one continued to follow up with me the way Erin has. And so I've always been impressed by her tenacity. And I think she's really going to do great things. So without further ado, we will bring on Erin Flynn. Hello, Erin.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, welcome to the Wisdom Circle. There's my buddy, Tony.
Welcome, Erin.
Previously.
Appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Cool.
Yeah. We're excited to have you because I think you are a great example of, and again, for the Wisdom Circle, where we try to give back and help, you know, across the board of demographics, from, you know, the younger audience to the current, to the older audience, like the guys with gray hair, like Tony and I. We have a lot of both, I'm happy to say. So talk a little bit about, you know, I know, well, talk a little bit about what your journey's been like. I mean, we met at UMiami.
Yeah.
I know you had plans to go to LA, and, you know, how's it going? Just give us like a quick.
Yeah. I mean, if we go like backward a couple of years, no, maybe 5. I think that's when you spoke. And I was a transfer at University of Miami, came in the spring semester of my freshman year, And I came in as a PR major, didn't really fully understand what that was until probably that class. And you came in and spoke one day, and I'm pretty sure only like maybe three people went up to you. And I was like, why is not everyone going up to this man? He has like the coolest story. And he works at NBC Telemundo. Like, that's the raddest thing. Anyway, we chatted, and then you were like, FIFA World Cup opportunity internship. And I was like, I'm in. Then you were like, but you need to be bilingual. And I was like, I don't think I can do that by tomorrow. and then we kept in touch. But since then, I switched over time, majored in business of motion pictures, kept a PR and marketing minor. So kind of everything was still very like entertainment related, whether it was from like the business side or more creative side. And then during college, did a program with Disney, or did the Disney college program. So lived and worked in Orlando, came back, COVID hit. So then it was kind of like a Zoom semester, and then a funky couple year and a half following that, that was partially Zoom, partially in person. Came out of college and ended up doing one more program with Disney for a year. And that led me to moving back to Pennsylvania, which is not as warm as Miami. So not always my favorite, because I like to escape the cold. But that said, since then, like, I have interned with a studio, Dolphin Entertainment, and I worked in the creative development department. And I did that at the end of college and right before Disney, and then have kept in touch with them. And I'm kind of in a position of like having almost a mentor with the VP of development of production to just like help her with like some things. And that's kind of keeping an internship like presence with them. And then besides that, it is literally my job has become applying for jobs.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was working at a fitness studio. I was helping with social media marketing. I've done that with rescue shelters and animals. But ultimately, I've kind of been in this transition period, especially in the past couple of months, of if my job isn't progressing me where I want to go, then it's really just holding me back at this point from potentially even using that time to apply for the jobs that'll get me where I want to go. And that came with the plan to go out to LA come this month. And quite literally the day I put in my notice with work, I let even my trainer know at the gym, like, we're going to start mellowing out. That same day, the fires happened, which was like, you know, call it a coincidence, call it whatever you will. It felt like a sign. Equally, that's not to say I'm not trying to still like get out to LA, but I'm not so quick to move right away, especially just because the renting market has surged. Like, everything's a bit chaotic, that I was planning to go without the opportunity, because that's kind of the industry, is sometimes you have to do the hustle of you move and then you break in. Right. And now I'm kind of like, I'd like to break in first, just because LA's, you know, rebuilding at the moment.
Wow. That's a lot to take on. I mean, for me, it was like, you know, getting on the Long Island Railroad to go into the city to interview for a job. And that was a big hurdle. Like, oh my God, you've had so much. And yet you've still stayed really focused. And so I think that passion, it came through in just this brief description. So it doesn't sound like you've been knocked off the mark in terms of, you talked about perseverance. And so what drives that feeling for you? What is it that has you saying, you know what? And where are you in the thought process of staying connected at Disney, want to work in LA, it's uninhabitable to just go out there and start paying a lot of rent. So what are you thinking about as next 6 months, next year, next 3 years? I mean,
yeah,
what would be the perfect outcome?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, even in this exact little season, I'm not working as consistently I was even a month and a half ago. And that comes with the blessing of being fortunate enough that my parents allow me to come home and have free rent. And that's not the case for everyone, right? So that's a privilege in itself, that I can take a pause from a job that's not my career so that I can get to my career. But not everyone has that, right? And they have to stick with the job just to keep like ends meet. But that said, the longer I kept going with having a job and feeling like, well, at least I have a job, it was like almost like a restless mindset around it, like
sure.
A discomfort almost in being too comfortable with a job that's not, like, I know I'm not where I want to be, and I know it's not meeting like my vision in life for myself or like any of those dreams and ambitions. And so that's where it became like that discomfort of not like pushing myself where I want to be is pushing me more than the comfort of just having a job.
Right.
So yeah. It's almost like just being like content in the season you're in, but you know, like it's not like you could be doing more to get where you want to be. So that said, but it has come with like a lot of just networking. And even at Disney, the leaders that I had there, I would meet with them during my shift and quite literally they would pull you in the middle of your shift. You get paid for it to just have a chit chat and they would just listen to your dreams and ambitions and be like, let me think who I know at Disney. And that was how I got connected with a couple different people who were in film production, but one of them does the marketing and filming for the theme parks. And it's an outsourced like studio that works with Disney just for the parks themselves. And so that's been a constant conversation. And that's the closest it's gotten to potentially things coming into motion of getting on set, but it's not quite there. So it's been conversations like that. And then there's people out in LA I've met. And when I went out to really just like network, that's like been an evolvement of keeping in touch, but also like, hey, I'll refer you for this job, but you know, they might choose someone who's already here or whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, it seems, Aaron, you know, getting to know you now just for the first time, you sort of went through a 5-year total disruption, which had nothing to do really with you personally. You know, you went from COVID, which impacted everybody. You have a film industry and television industry that got impacted A, by COVID and then by strikes. You know, where they were trying to get the economics right with AI and everything else. And I know enough to be dangerous here because I have a niece who's probably about your age who worked at CAA, then got let go because of COVID. And for those who don't know, CAA is a big artist agency that handles directors, actors, et cetera, et cetera. And now works as an assistant for a woman who owns her own production company. So, and she's still, you know, struggling in this process, but she loves it like you do. And I give that as background one, because you almost just because of your time and age, you got hit with a lot of things, but if I was advising you, I would say, okay, let's just start all over, you know, even though you built contacts or whatever, and what do I want to do? And now let me go through it, because you've also had studios and many companies laying off people. Are we working at home? Are we working in the office? So I'd like to think that maybe this is now ground zero moving forward as we go into the middle of 25 and 26. And now if I was, you know, again, giving you any advice, which was, OK, what do I really want to do? And I would not, I should let you answer the question. But I would also learn, and you probably do know this, that don't get caught up in the big names, i.e. Disney or Paramount Universal, because the work of production is being done by, in many cases, independent production companies, you know, that are doing shows that are getting a deal with Netflix and Amazon and Apple. And so you could really learn the trade, you know, going into these smaller companies, as important as they are, who have, you know, a five series commitment to Netflix for a lot of money. So I say all that as background, but right now your ideal job would to be fill in the blank, to work for it on films and production and ultimately be a producer writer, or what is it that you're striving to be?
Yeah, that's sometimes the big question, because I have an answer, but in theory, I feel like until you're actually doing the job, that's when you really know, like, that's where you see yourself. I love development and pre-production in the film industry. So working in the creative development space, which ultimately I think it grows into a development executive, I believe is the name for it. So it's that like department. And I think that came from like, I have kind of a lot of interests. I had 4 minors, a change major in college, and now I've been doing like social media marketing, film, animals. It's kind of a mix. And that's all to say, while passions are great, what the biggest, I think, thing with this industry, let alone any of them, is like you kind of need a narrow path so that you're specialized in something, because they're choosing who's going to be the best at this exact position. And so I think that can be difficult when you aren't fully in that job yet, that you end up ultimately developing other skills, even if they will cultivate you for the one when it comes. But I'd say development. On the other hand, I would just say anything that helps animals, like National Geographic could hire me for anything and I'd be happy. Mm-hmm. But that's like the side passion, you know?
Yeah. Well, I have a side passion of sports, and I spent 46 years in the sports business. So don't, you know, pay attention to that. So tell us what the job search is like. I mean, how are you going about starting with online applications to contacts that you have that are alive, or networking with guys like Tony and I? What does your job search entail on a daily, like if you sit down and say, okay, time to get out some resumes and some cover letters, what are you doing?
Yeah. And you and I were talking about how just like that job search, like landscape has totally evolved, right? Because the whole new, especially since COVID, like realm with that. Ultimately, it really just looks like basically me starting my day with like, and this comes with a day of not having a job. So there, you know, a little bit of freedom there of building structure. Sometimes I think being given structure can actually be more helpful at times. You kind of have to create that for yourself. But quite literally, the morning is like a get your morning routine in, like a little time of devotional prayer, and then it's workout. And then it's just like apply for jobs and essentially till like dinner, and then maybe keep looking at it. So that's like, for me, it's a lot of doing cover letters. I think what, like, ultimately, I think when you're more developed in your industry and you've already been promoted to different positions, it becomes more about your resume and who you know and them already seeing you do your job and do it well. But when I think you're trying to break into entry level, you're trying to sell yourself, whether it's the resume, the cover letter, but ultimately also who you know to get your name seen in a pile. And I think that was actually a question I wanted to ask you guys, because it is kind of funky to figure out what makes you the best candidate even to get to the interview stage, let alone just being in a season that I know like a lot of 20 somethings aren't alone in, that until you get that entry level position and break in, especially if you're past that 6 month, like get into an internship that kind of lands you in the studio phase, there's that fear that you're losing the competence or the skills that'll ultimately make you a good candidate.
Well, and the skills required, and this is the hardest part, if I were sitting in your chair, is that the skills required are changing. It used to be if you could edit tape, then it was, can you edit digital? Now it is, can you work in the AI space? So it's the evolution is, it's like anything, it just builds momentum.
Part two of this podcast will be available next week. For more information, please visit us at www.thewisdomcircle.com. Thank you.